my remarks by, again, I've been doing a lot of reading, a lot of studying on Moses right now. Again, the Lord turned my heart to Moses. Again, as we went to see, again, the drama about him and just looking at different things that Moses went through. Maybe some of you out there, he's your favorite Bible character. I don't know. And if you've picked Moses, he's a good one. He is not my favorite Bible character, but the more I've studied him, the more, again, I've seen things in his life that I really enjoy, and the great man that he was for God, and how God, again, he was used of God greatly. And again, just studying some things and brought me back to these passages here that I was impressed in the drama. Again, what he walked away from to go serve God. Amazing. What he walked away from to go serve God. Again, you can see there in Hebrews 11:24, again, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. If you are the son of Pharaoh's daughter, think about everything you've got that's just at your disposal. I watched a replay of something that was at Wimbledon this week or whatever, and I didn't really get to watch it, but I watched what's happening, And sure enough, as the Britain's favorite son was playing, and he got beat, that's what I was watching to see what happened. But sure enough, when Britain's favorite son was there to play his match, to make it into the semifinals or whatever, I mean, the royal family showed up. Okay? They were there to see him. You know, and about every time something happened, they went to the box to show the royalty there or whatever. And, you know, I was just kind of thinking, like, again, here they are, they're royalty. Where do they sit when they go to Wimbledon? They sit in the royal box, all right? And they got front row seats. And they don't have to call up and say, is it possible that I can get a ticket? Okay? When they show up, maybe others lose their place for them to get there. I do know that if you ever watch Wimbledon, if some of the royalty shows up when the match is over before you leave, if you're a man, if you're a player, you have to bow towards the box, towards those people. If you're a lady, they curtsy, do they not? But what a life to live. I was kind of watching them up there. Again, William was there and his wife and all that. And boy, just thinking, you know, they're just so prominent. And again, it's just not possessions, though they're very rich people. It's just power. It's just everybody adores them. And Moses walked away from that life. Just walked away from it. There was a baby born in the royal family not too long ago. Again, as things continue in England as they are, what kind of life is that baby going to have? Really a hard life. Don't you feel sorry for that little baby being born here? Is he George? Is that who he is? Okay. Poor boy. He doesn't have any advantages in life at all, does he? I mean, this guy's got everything just given to him. And Moses walked away from it. Now, here's the question. How did he do it? And I'd like to just kind of answer the question today. How is it possible for a Christian to walk away from something that just looks and is so good? Just walk away from it. And I think this passage gives us a little hint, and then the passage will go on to. But how can a Christian walk away from something that looks and not just looks, is so good? Again, maybe for the temporal. How do you just walk away? Let's have a word of prayer. Father, I pray you would help us to answer that question. How does a Christian walk away, again, from something that Moses was offered and what Moses, again, just had? And Lord, we can only conjecture that maybe because of the position that he was in, maybe he could have even been headed to be the next Pharaoh, again, as the line came down. Lord, we don't know. But if he wasn't the next Pharaoh, he was really close to it. And Lord, he had so much at his disposal. Help us to see, Lord, that as we turn and put our hope in you, that, Lord, you can take and also give us the same desires that you gave Moses. And some of these things that look so good, we can stay away from them, Lord, to serve you. Lord, teach us in our hearts today, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Look at verse 24, if you will. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years. I've always said this, again, when it comes to parenting. I always tell people, if you're the best parent in the world, write the book. Okay? Write the book. Tell us all how we should have done it, how we should be doing it. Parenting's one of the hardest jobs in the world. It's really tough. A lot of factors into it. But as I think about parenting, there was something that I told people, that I've told people for years. And again, maybe my philosophy, maybe it's not so biblical. But I always told people, I think there's certain markers in life that as your children are being raised, they ought to hit these markers and be ready. Okay? They ought to hit these markers and be ready at certain times, okay? And I do know that, you know, it's just not Christians, it's the world that puts these markers out there, but I just think there's certain plateaus that your children ought to be ready to do things at certain times, okay? You say, well, what are they? Well, you know, sort of like 5 years old, okay? And that's what the world says too, but about 5 years old, your kids ought to be able to leave the house and go to school in the morning, okay? And be able to conduct themselves at a school, okay? That means they know how to do certain things. You're not there, there is a teacher there, we're not just putting them out there, okay? And they ought to be able at 5 years old to do certain things. Now, again, if you want to see what frustration is, talk to a kindergarten teacher, okay? And Shannon just walked in, okay? And I got one right here in Jason. Talk to a kindergarten teacher who at 5 years old, when it's pretty well mandated that the kids got to walk in the classroom and they're not ready for anything. Okay? Frustrating. Talk to Jason. I've heard the stories. Okay? There's basic skills kids ought to be able to do at 5 years old for themselves. And if they can't, I usually say something like this. You're a little behind time. You're a little behind. Okay? So that when a child steps in at 5 years, and again, I'm not going to give you all the markers, but there are certain markers or certain plateaus your children ought to reach. And by 5 years old, there's certain things they ought to be able to do to care for themselves and take care of themselves. Okay? And if not, you put the teacher in a very hard position, because then they've got to teach them, because these are things that are expected. Okay? I've usually said this for Christian young people, and it's pretty much across the board. Check any Christian camp. Okay? When's the earliest they let young people come to camp? 8 years old. Usually every camp is 8 years old, is it not? And so by 8 years old, we pretty much figure not only can they just not go to kindergarten, they can go to camp and have bigger responsibilities and still handle them, okay? Even bigger responsibilities. Now, again, if you're a camp counselor, you know, God bless you with those younger ones. But if you have kids that are prepared, they know how to brush their teeth, they know how to take a shower by themselves, they know how to dress and go to bed and do and change and put clean clothes on in the morning, okay? These are markers, okay? Are your kids ready? Now, we got some kids going to camp. Can you do this stuff, okay? Look, I don't want to see you, I don't want to say goodbye to you on Monday, okay? And see you on Friday come back to the church with the same clothes on, okay? Don't want to see it, okay? Especially if you went to mud pit, all right? Don't want to see it. Change your clothes. Brush your teeth. Take a shower. Okay? You ought to be able to do these things at 8 years old. So when you go to camp, you're ready to go. There are certain things that you ought to be able to do. I usually tell people, you know, whether you choose to or not, by 16, you ought to be being able to assume pretty large responsibilities as a teenager. Okay? The biggest responsibility that the state puts upon us, if you'd like to, is you're allowed to do what at 16? Drive a car. Huge responsibility. Huge, okay? But again, parents ought to be teaching children, okay, so that when they get to about 16, they're able to start handling bigger responsibilities, okay, that we can throw upon them. And driving a car is big. And there's other responsibilities, but again, as they grow, and again, we start putting them on. So there's that. Now, notice, if you will, the words that are used here, okay, for Moses. By faith, Moses, when he was what? Come to years, which means he had grown up to the place where I'm pretty sure God started working in his life and said, here are certain things, Moses, that I've waited for you. I'm not pushing you too early. You are the right age now. But again, I think God started putting on his heart, here's something we need to start working on, Moses. You're the right age. You're going to walk away from Egypt. You're going to walk away from all this stuff. You're old enough. Okay? You've been around long enough, you're going to walk away. So when he was come 2 years, okay? And I believe that God worked in his heart, God had done a lot, and said, you know what, it's time for you to walk away. And basically, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Wow. What a great position. Now, again, if you are the son of Pharaoh's daughter, okay, in our economy, or not America's, but in the world, we usually call you a prince, do we not? So at that age, Moses dropped the prince, right? I liked about the drama, and I think I got the right word, but you know what they referred to him? After they dropped the title prince and he walked away from Egypt, do you know what term they used for Moses and the Israelites? Cockroach. That was the term at the play. Now, again, you can look in the Bible, I didn't find it. But as the Egyptians referred to Israelite, they refers to him as cockroaches. And again, the people there, again in Egypt, were kind of talking, how can Moses want to spend time with these cockroaches and be one himself? And I think one time in the play, I think it happened one time, that when Moses showed back up, they kind of referred to him as that cockroach. Okay? Now, I don't know about you, okay? How many of you like cockroaches? Okay, I don't think there's too many. There's always somebody weird to put their hand up. Yeah, I love cockroaches or whatever, okay? But I don't think any of us like cockroaches, do you, okay? Now, again, I do know this, that real cockroaches in America aren't real, real big things, okay? I remember being on the senior trip, was a year and a half ago or whatever, and we went down to South Carolina. As we were in South Carolina, this bug crawled out from underneath the stove, you know? And somebody says, man, look at that bug. That's the biggest cockroach I've ever seen. And I say, cockroaches don't get that big. And they go, well, it's a cockroach. It was a palmetto bug, okay? Now, South Carolina is the palmetto state, so it was a palmetto bug, okay? Cockroaches don't get that big, right? Now, you might say in, you know, somewhere in Chihuahua, I don't know. But, you know, our cockroaches up here, they're not really big, okay? But they're disgusting, okay? And I don't like them, right? If you've ever had them, they're tough to get rid of. They're not fun to have. Prince to cockroach. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. However, look at this. Verse 25 starts with the word choosing. It wasn't thrust upon him. It wasn't that he didn't have a choice. He made a conscious choice. This is what I'm going to do. Now, again, we might think, well, he had to leave Egypt because he killed a man. It was found out and all that. Okay, I understand all that, but that was not the choice. The choice to be identified with the Israelites was made before that activity. It was already made. Now, when he killed the man and had to flee, really didn't have much of a choice there. But he decided long before, I'm not going to go ahead and enjoy all these pleasures of sin for a season. I'm going to choose to suffer affliction with the people of God. He had a choice. I'm going to go ahead and suffer affliction with the people of God. My question is, and still comes up, how does a Christian choose that? That's a hard decision. I mean, cockroach, prince, luxuries, pleasures, beauty, brick making, mud. How do you do that? You know, and I do believe that God can work in our hearts. Again, notice verse 26. Notice verse 26 then. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Again, esteeming. Again, another word of a choice that had to be made. Knowing this is the better choice. Reproach with Christ. Treasures in Egypt. I know making this choice has a better result. That's hard to think about it at the time, is it not? I wrote in my Bible, Bob mentioned writing in his Bible. I wrote in my Bible, again, I wrote principles, not possessions and pleasure. He made a principled decision. Okay? Yeah, over here there is pleasures. There is possessions galore. There is all kinds of things. But as a child of God, I've got to make my decision on principle. Living by principles rather than pleasures and possessions. The other thing that I wrote in there, and they're kind of alliterated, I put on here eternity, not earth. Eternity, not earth. I know John Weaver said it, but I think he quoted it from somebody else in Sunday school class. Folks, we're going to be dead a long time. We're going to be dead a long time. Did you ever stop and think about that? Okay? We're going to be dead a really long time. Don't you think we should live for what's on the other side of death more than what's on this side? I don't know how long. I remember Les Olala went to a men's retreat at High Point, and maybe some of you were there years ago, because when I used to go to High Point, some of you were there. And he pulled out a yardstick. Anybody remember the yardstick illustration Les did? Tim, you remember? He pulled out a yardstick and said, you know what? 36 inches, double it, that's 72. That's an average man's life in America. Half an inch for every year. And then all of a sudden he reached up and he broke the thing off. And he had this little piece in his hand. And you know what Les said? That's all I got left, folks. He threw the major part of away and said, that's all I got left. Now, for some of you, we're going to be, some of you in here, you're breaking part of the yardstick that's not even there right now. Because you're over 72. Am I right about that? I mean, so when you say, okay, well, what's left in my life? Well, throw the whole yardstick away. You're already over 72. But you know, when you die, how long are we going to be in heaven? Has anybody ever done, I told me, the brain freeze where you try to think about eternity and you're thinking and you're thinking and then all of a sudden you go, whoa, boy, that, whoa, that hurt. Okay? That's a huge thing, is it not? And he said, you know what? We're going to go with eternity, not the earth. Verse 27, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. And notice his decision. I love these words. Make sure you see they're in there. For he endured. You know what? He didn't go back on his decision. He endured. He didn't quit. He didn't all of a sudden say, you know what? I've been down here making bricks, and I've been down here living like a Jew. I've been down here living like a cockroach. That's what they call me up there. And you know what? It's time to go back and get back into the palace. He endured. He did not walk back on his decision. He didn't go back at it at all. Again, God can do a work in our hearts, and I know he can, where he can take the things of this world, and I'm going to use the word sour them to us, till we don't even want to. I want you to go to Psalm 131. We read a verse there earlier, Psalm 131. Again, that as I was just studying Moses did not write Psalm 131. David did. But again, I think we can use it to maybe see what God can do for us. Psalm 131, it is a song of degrees, which means when the people were headed for the temple, they would sing these songs as they were climbing the mountains around Jerusalem to go to the temple. Again, this is one of the shortest psalms. I don't think it's the shortest psalm, but it's a very short psalm. And Charles Haddon Spurgeon said, it's probably the shortest psalm to read and the longest psalm to learn, is what he said. Reading it's one thing, learning it's another thing. But again, I think this psalm, and I entitled the sermon, Weaned from Self. Weaned from self is really what it is. I'm going to talk about a subject that I don't know a whole lot about, though I think it happened to me, okay, but I've not had to do it, is weaning. But you'll notice here as he starts out, and this is David talking, Lord, my heart is not haughty, nor mine eyes lofty. Again, when I come here, I read the commentaries, I read different things that people had to say, but you know what? You don't talk to God with this subject and be untruthful with him. You don't do it. You don't come to God and say, you know what, God, my heart is not haughty. Again, you don't come to God and say, God, right now, there's no high spirit in me. Lord, right now, there's no pride in me. And lie to him. Don't do it. I mean, I can take you over to Proverbs, can I not? Where God says six things I hate. Yay! Seven are an abomination unto me. And what are they? Pride and a high look are on the list. And they're right here in this verse. You know what? He says, I'm not haughty and I don't have eyes lofty. Okay? And God said, those are things I hate. You don't come to God and lie about things he hates and act like you don't have them. And I believe that as David was writing this psalm, one of the things that he was saying, Lord, is, Lord, you've done a work in my heart. And the work that you did in my heart is probably the hardest work that has to be done in somebody's heart, is to get rid of pride. I think that's terrible. I think it's a terrible work to get rid of it. I know this from studying the Bible and doing different things. Again, pride is one of the things that cities and countries were destroyed for in the Bible. Destroyed. But sometimes we make it this respectable sin. We really do. You know, I mean, if you were to get up in a church service and say something like this, well, I have a problem with pride. You know, it just wells up inside of me from time to time. And I have this problem with it. But I hope you all pray for me that, you know, I stop being such a proud person. You know, we kind of sit there and say what? Okay, yeah. Yeah, we understand what you're talking about. Yeah, we'll pray for you. Hope you get over it. And we just kind of dismiss it like, yeah, well, you have that problem, but, you know, it's okay. You know, what if somebody stood up and said, you know, in there, Lord, you know, I got this problem with murder. In the last couple of weeks, I've murdered some people. And I know it's in my heart. Now, y'all pray for me that I stop doing it. How many of you go, yeah, you know, yeah, murder. Yeah, it happens to the best of us, you know. And we'll pray for him. What do you say? But can I tell you something? That when it comes to the Bible, God seems to have punished pride more than he punished other sins sometimes, destroying whole countries and cities and men for pride. And yet we've kind of elevated it to this, okay, we all have a problem with it, it's okay, we'll pray about it. Where God says, you need to get rid of it. And here is a man I believe that God has worked through him. And when the work was done, in all honesty, under inspiration, David wrote, my heart is not haughty, nor my eyes lofty. God, you've done a work in my heart, and you've taken pride from me. I do think this is one of the things that helps when you start seeing God for who he is and who you are. Doesn't that help get rid of pride a little bit? Doesn't that help get rid of pride? It really does. When you start seeing God for who he is. And David is just saying, you know, God, you've done a work. Here's what you have to remember for David. David had a predecessor, and pride's the thing that got him. When it comes to King Saul, pride's what got him. In fact, God even came to Saul and said, look, I found you when you were just young and little. I made you my king, the king, but you know what? You didn't stay small in your own eyes, Saul. And the king before David had a problem with pride. And I believe that David was saying, when I get to be king, that's the one thing I got to watch out for. Don't let pride get me. Now, another story. You remember when David brought the ark into Jerusalem. I mean, he was really happy. And if I could just put this, okay, as he was dancing and singing and praising God and worshiping him as the ark was coming into Jerusalem, that former king's daughter looked out of a window and saw David doing what he was doing, okay? And tell me, how did it go down with her? She was really upset. She was really upset. And later in the day, when David met her, and by the way, they were married, okay? She married him, Michael. And she said, today, sort of this way, you were just disgusting the way you were acting in front of the people. You weren't acting like a king. Are you following me through? What was David's answer? You know what? When it comes to the Lord and a great thing that he's doing, I'm not acting all high and lifted up. I was rejoicing because the ark was coming back. And if you think that that's disgusting, I'm sorry. This king doesn't always act high and lifted up. That's basically the paraphrase of what was going on. And he was letting her know. She was probably going to say something like this. My dad would have never done anything like that. But you got to remember, her dad was no longer king nor the family because of the pride that welled up in him. And David was saying, you know what, I'm not always going to put on and act like a king, like everybody thinks I'm supposed to act. When God is doing a great work, I'm going to just be like the common people. I'm going to get excited about what God is doing. And so when she looked up, she was upset. And here's David, I believe, later saying, you know, my heart is not haughty, my eyes neither lofty. Okay, again, I don't just have this pride. And notice what he says there, and I like this part. Neither do I exercise myself in great matters or in things too high for me. Folks, there are certain matters that I'm going to put it this way. They are God's matters. They are God's topics. They are God's ways. And what we need to do is just humble ourselves and say, God, you know, these are your things. These are your things. One of the people, I know it's a parable, but if it's a true story, I'd like to meet him. Okay? But in Matthew 25, there was a Lord that got servants and gathered them, and he gave one servant five, and he gave one servant two, and he gave one servant one talent. Do you remember that? The guy with five went out and got five more. The guy with two went out and got two more. The guy with one, what did he do? He buried it. Now, you know who really interests me in that? The guy with two. Nothing is really said about him. He gets two more. Not much is said about him. Now watch this. He is standing there and watching five talents be delivered to his friend. And then he gets what? Two. Two. Do you know what? He was okay with it, folks. Okay. Five. He could have said, two. He's got five. But he was good with his what? Two. Not questioning. But you know what? He took his two and did his job the best he could. And his two got what? Two more. Now, let's just go into math. And if I'm wrong mathematically, correct me. But somebody tell me what percentage gain that is on your money. Okay? He's got 100% gain, isn't it? You got two, you get two. 100% gain, is that it? The guy that got five, what was his gain number? Same number. I mean, he did just as good with his two as the guy did with five. And you know what? It wasn't his bit. It wasn't his portion. It wasn't his place to know, why'd you get five? And I only got two. This guy said, I got two. That's good. I'm going to take this two and go out and do the best I can with it. Not questioning what was going on. And yet, I think some people would probably get stuck. Well, why'd he get five? Or why'd he get two? And by the way, there was another parable that Jesus taught. Remember, people went into a field to work? And those who worked all day got how much? One denarii. Those who worked 1 hour of the day got what? One denarii. What happened to the guys that worked all day and got one? Folks, they didn't obey verse one. They got caught up in things that weren't their business. Okay? And that's why it says here, now look, neither do I exercise myself in great matters or in things too high for me. And I believe that basically you are a common laborer. This guy is the owner of the plantation. This is a guy that's got maybe the business degrees and all that. And all of a sudden you're all worried about his job. That's not your place. You work, you do what you're supposed to do. So again, I kind of like that man who got two talents. Hey, God just gave me two talents. I'm going to do the best I can. Again, for me, when God has given me a job to do, when God has given me something that He's wanted me to do, no matter how mundane I think it is, do that job the best I can and don't worry about going and doing somebody else's job. I mentioned in Sunday school, and I kind of laugh about it, but we worked at McDonald's a couple years ago, and this is back when, again, when we had the fundraiser at McDonald's for Center County Christian Academy, you were allowed to work behind the counter. They don't let us do it anymore, okay? And I don't know, well, maybe somebody else messed up. But we were standing, and the lady looked at Bob Mahalik and I, okay? Bob and I are standing there, and I think Bob's in Sutton, he's in junior church, so I can talk about him, okay? But she goes, I got two jobs, you guys decide who does what, okay? So we're standing there, Bob and I, okay? And she goes, the first job is I need somebody to run the McDonald's McCafe. And as soon as she did that, I just went like this, okay? Because I know if you're working in the McCafe, what are you making? Somebody tell me what's the number one thing you're going to make and serve. Coffee. Who's out when it comes to coffee? I'm out. So as soon as she said McCafe, I just pointed to Bob. Okay? And, you know, and Bob's like, well, I'll do that. And I don't know if he even knew I pointed. I don't know if he did, but I was just like, yeah, he's doing that. Okay? And then he went back there, you know, and I still remember like, you know, 5 or 10 minutes later, they were still trying to tell him all those things he had to do because he had to make sundaes and cones and coffee. And he had all this stuff and they're telling him what to do like the next 10 minutes, all these instructions. I mean, he got a responsible job. And then she looked at me and she goes, well, I guess you get a rag and you just wipe tables. And you know what? I was okay with me. Just wipe tables. You know how long it told me that, you know how long the instructions were to me to wipe tables? You know, this is what she said. I'm going to give you two rags. All right. You tie a knot in one. The one that the knot is in, you wipe the seats off. The one without the knot, you wipe the tabletops. Never confuse it because people don't want to see you wipe where people sit and then wipe where they eat. You got that? I'm like, I can do this. Okay. I did pretty good. Then a little while later, she came out and she gave me a bucket. And she goes, try to get tips if you can. All right. I guess what I'm supposed to do is clean tables so good that people want to give me extra money. I don't know. But I did come up with eight because I started telling people, if you give me so much money, I will sing a song. I'll do a cheer. And so I started getting some things. I think I said $50, you'll get Alice. But nobody gave me $50 to do Alice, if anybody knows what that means. But again, I tell people, I got a job wiping tables. I looked around. There was other people doing stuff. Some people were doing work at the cash fairs. Some people were in the window over there. There's Bob at the McCafe and all that. You're wiping tables, all right? How's that go with you? It's honest work. It's what somebody needs to do. Because I'm going to be honest with you. You go to McDonald's and the table is really dirty. What's that do for you? Yeah, you know. And then Steve Weaver came in a little while later because there's a thing for me to do. I said, you can help me wipe tables. Why? You're not doing a good job? I'm doing a good job. But you know, when God gives you, don't say, well, I really wish I could be. Or why did you give them that job? I want this job. You know what David is saying? You know what, God? I'm not going to worry about things. Now, you say, well, what was David not worrying about? I'll give you something in David's life, and I don't know when this psalm was written. Saul has died. Saul has died. How long did it take before David became the king of Israel? Over 7 years, folks. 7 years before he became the king of Israel. Now, Judah made him their king, but the rest of Israel did not have him. And I can imagine that he's thinking, you know what? Come on, God. What are you doing? Do you know what you're doing, God? You told me I was going to be the king. It's been 6 years now, God, and I still don't have it. What are you doing, God? And David is saying here what? You know what? There are matters that I'm not going to touch. I'm not worried about that. And in time, at the right time, David did become the king of Israel. But before he became the king of all of Israel, it took over seven years before. He was ruling in Hebron. He was not the king in Jerusalem. Okay? He was not king in Jerusalem at that point in time. It was years later until he finally moved into Jerusalem. And you know what? I think David was saying, you know what, God? I'm okay with that. That's your business. You know what's best. And here's the point I want you to make as you go into verse 2. You've got to understand that God knows what best. Because here's the illustration in verse 2. God knows when it's time to do a work in our lives. And no matter how hard that work is in our lives, we have got to trust God that He knows what He's doing. Okay? The illustration that is given is weaning. Okay? That's the illustration that is given. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I know certain things about babies. Had two of them in my home. I've had more in the home lately also. Okay? And I love babies. I really do. All right? But there comes a time when they come of years. You remember that verse over in Hebrews 11? When they come to years, and it's time to do what? To wean them. Now, up until that time, what is almost or is the most important thing in their life? Mommy and her milk. It is the most important thing in their life. I mean, it's what they live for. Right? I usually tell people that, you know, my third grandchild, and I have said this before, happiest child I've ever seen. Okay? And now people say, well, that's because he's your grandson. No, I had two others. I never said about them. Didn't say it about them. But we always knew when he was hungry, because he never cries, but he's just started to get cranky when he's hungry. And so it's quite easy to know when he's hungry. You know, if he's crying, he's hungry. Or if he's getting a little cranky, he's hungry. Because he doesn't cry otherwise. And I tell people, if you feed him on schedule, you can keep him for a week and he never cries. That's a nice baby, is it not? He only got fussy when he wanted to eat. But you know what? If you didn't get it to him, attitude starts changing really quick. Because I want it. And I want it when? Now. Okay? And so we tried to keep on top of the schedule and know how long ago would you give a bottle? And then before he was dropped off, when was the last bottle given? And when he's picked up, when was the last bottle? You know, and everything's fine. But I'll tell you what, that is most important. But there comes a day when he becomes of years, okay, and becomes of age, and it's time for mom to say what? The thing that you want the most in this life, the thing that makes you the happiest in this whole life, I'm taking it from you. Wow. And here's what David says in chapter 1. I mean, in verse 1. God, this is your business. When you know something needs to be taken from me, it's your business. I'm just going to trust you that you know what you're doing. And I'll tell you what, I think one of the times that I remember, I was at a friend's house or a man's house and friends, and they had horses, and one night they separated the young ones from the big ones, and it was weaning time. I'll tell you what, they put the little ones over on this side of the farm, and they put the moms and all that on this side of the farm. I'll tell you what, those colts or whatever they were, those foals, you'd have thought they were dying. They wanted mom, and they wanted her now. I mean, what they were doing through the night was just unbelievable. How can you do this to me? How can you do this to me? Now, I don't know. He asked my parents, but I guess somewhere along the line, this happened to me too. Okay. And I probably was thinking, though I don't remember the time, why are you doing this to me, Mom? Why are you doing this? I mean, the thing that is most important to me, you are taking it from me. But you know what? God, mothers, they know what they're doing. He became of years. It's time to give it up. And that which was at one time most precious, valuable, and desired by us in all the world, now listen to me, I'm going to try to be nice, becomes something we don't want ever again. The desire is gone. Now, I'm going to give an illustration. I'm going to try to keep it high as I can, but you're going to understand it. Because there are times, if you're a grandparent and you're watching children for your child, that they're going to give the child to you for a little bit of an extended period of time. And if the child is not weaned, other supplements come with the baby. And it has to go into the refrigerator. Are you with me on this? And so you come to the refrigerator, you open it up, and there is this container of milk. And you open it up and you go, oh, what's that? And the wife says, that milk's not for you. Now watch this. There was nothing inside of me that said I wanted that. Is anybody with me? Did I keep the illustration high, but you understand what I'm talking about? What's in that bottle? I don't want it. But when I was a year old or younger or whatever it is, I lived my whole life for that stuff. And there came a time when somebody did a work in my life. And now when I look at it on the shelf, right there in the refrigerator, I'm thinking what? I don't want that stuff at all. Anybody else with me on this? What happened? Psalm 37:4, commit your way unto the Lord and He will give you the desires of your heart. That doesn't mean all the fun things I want in life God's going to make sure I get. That literally means He puts desires, new desires in your heart. And those old things that used to be so desirable are what? Not desirable anymore. Okay? Now, if you know this, I am a milk drinker. Okay? I like milk. I like chocolate milk. All right? I mean, I've got the Hershey container right there. I got the milk right there. And I learned a long time ago, and Dan knows I say this. When I go out and exercise or do something, everybody who's ever done a study, the number one drink you need to take after exercising is chocolate milk. I mean, you're supposed to know that. But studies have been done. It's not Gatorade. It's not all that other stuff. The best thing you're supposed to drink is what? Chocolate milk. That's great because I love chocolate milk. Some of these races I go to, as soon as I go across the finish line, they serve chocolate milk. I love that because they say the protein you need after exercising and the sugars you need to replace, chocolate milk's the best thing. I love chocolate milk. Okay? But it better be in that thing that came from the Weiss store. Because that bottle there, I ain't touching it. Everybody follow me through? God changed my desires. Now I asked the question in the beginning, how did Moses walk away from the pleasures of Egypt? God changed his desires. God weaned him from it. But you know what? Sometimes when we're in the middle of the weaning, how do we act as Christians? Oh, we cry and scream and bawl like we are dying. But here's the part I want you to know. That when God has taken you off those things that you thought were so good and you couldn't live without, there's a whole new world of His goodness open to you. Well, folks, if I hadn't been weaned, I wouldn't know what steak is. And let me tell you, steak's pretty good. Okay? It's really good. You know what? I'm going over here to eat. If I hadn't been weaned yet, I wouldn't be eating anything over there, would I? But I do like certain things a lot. And somebody says, well, Pastor, you were weaned years ago. How's that working? Really good. Really good. I don't want that stuff anymore. There's a whole new world opened up. And when you go back to Hebrews 11, you don't have to go back there, but he esteemed basically the riches of Christ were better than the what? Treasures down in Egypt. God changed him. And I can almost imagine that when Moses walked back into Egypt years later after being on the backside of the desert, people would have thought, you know what, when he walked back into Egypt, man, isn't it going to be so good to go back into Egypt and get all those good things that Egypt offers? And Moses walks in and says what? I don't want any of it. I don't want any of it. God's got so much more now and in the next life for me than those treasures. And I believe that when it says in Psalm 37:4, commit thy ways unto the Lord and he'll give you the desires of your heart, he literally will change your desire and you won't want the old stuff that you thought was so good. And you're going to want the new stuff. Lord, bend my heart towards you. And as you get to know God more and more, you'll see that what he has for us is even better. That's why it says in verse 2, surely I have behaved and quieted myself like a child that is weaned of his mother. My soul is even like a weaned child. Again, what that verse means is there's a child that wants mom and what mom offers. Mom says, you're not getting it anymore. But then just a little while later, that child loves to be in his mother's arms and doesn't even need that anymore. And says, you know what? Mom knows what's best. And I've always said this, and I've said it publicly, I've said it a lot of times, there's nothing like a mother. Folks, there is nothing like a mother. Absolutely. When it comes to anybody, there's nothing like a mother. I can be holding my grandchild, and they are happy, and we are talking, okay, and I don't know what he's saying yet, but we're talking, and we're having a great time, and mom walks in the room. Does anybody know what happens? I get the, right there. You know? And he wants who? Mom. Okay? I could look at him and say, why do you want her? She made you miserable a couple months ago when she weaned you. You don't want her. She's a terrible person. Remember what she did to you? But he's like, what? I want mom. I want mom. Because mom knows what's best. And now there's all kinds of good stuff to eat. I mean, he's loving all kinds of good stuff. Gave him prunes the other day. He even ate them. Okay? But he wants mom, and that's what it is. You know what? Well, didn't God put you through a tough test? Didn't God put you through a tough way? Yeah, God did. And what came out on the other side is better. And I love just to rest in his arms. And that's why it says in verse 3, as we get to the end, let Israel hope in the Lord from henceforth and what? Forever. God knows what's best. I don't know what God is going to put me through tomorrow. I don't know what he's going to put me through next week or the next month or the next year. He's going to put me through some tough times, and it might just be like weaning. God, why are you doing this? I was really enjoying this. And God put me through something and he's saying, you know what? Because what I have for you is so much better. And David is just saying, just trust God. He knows what he's doing. Here's how I end it. I'm going to end it here. But this is almost like a psalm of thanksgiving. We sing the song, count your many blessings. Name them what? One by one. Do you know what maybe sometimes we need to reverse our thinking is? What are all the things that God took away from us that we need to thank him for? Because if we still had them, we'd be miserable and not living for him. Do you ever stop and think about that? Hey, Moses, what are you thankful for? Whew, I am so thankful that God changed my heart and I was able to choose the things of Christ. So thankful for that. Well, but you went to the desert. I know, but I'm so thankful that God changed my desire, gave me the desires of my heart. And God has taken things away. And the things I used to love, they don't have the same thing. I tell people, for somebody who was addicted to something, aren't you glad God changed your heart? And those things that used to be so precious are what? Gone now. God's changed you. And we can thank God not just for what he gives us, but he also thank him for what he has taken away. And again, may our prayer be, Lord, some of the things in this world that catch my attention and I want so bad, Lord, change the desires of my heart. So I want to rest and hope in you and not in the things of this earth. There are still things in this world we need to be weaned from. The weaning's hard, but on the other side of it, it's way better. I always tell people, milk, steak. Which one are you in for? I love milk. But folks, when I go to a steakhouse, I don't say, bring me a glass of milk. Okay? I want it this thick and medium rare. Okay? And it's really, really good. If I wouldn't have been a work done in my life, I wouldn't want it. God, we just got to pray to him. God, take away those desires for Egypt and bend our heart towards you. Father, I pray that you would help us to realize that a man like Moses forsook Egypt, walked away from all that stuff. But Lord, I was believed because when he became of age, when he came to years, you had done a work in his heart and you weaned him off of Egypt. and he desired the things of Christ, which are far better. Lord, I pray that you will wean us off of this world. Lord, wean us off of ourselves. So, Lord, we're no longer number one in our lives, but you are. And, Lord, when decisions need to be made, we made them, we make them in the hope of the glory of God, and we desire what you want instead of what we want. Lord, thank you for Moses and the example he was. Thank you for David. And, Lord, how he was a man after God's own heart and not a selfish king like the man before him. Do that work in our hearts, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.